The Paddy Power Half Hour on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
Welcome into the Paddy Power Half Hour on this Friday as we look forward to a vital weekend in the Premier League, which is headlined by the top of the table clash between Liverpool and Manchester City. Both teams leaving it late last weekend, but 6 points remains the deficit and the advantage that Liverpool have at the summit of the table at the moment. We'll be looking forward to that one and some other interesting games as well. We'll consider whether Arsenal can throw away another lead, having done so in the last 4 games, and Manchester United looking to get back on track after their defeat against Bournemouth last weekend as well. Don't forget, we will be discussing all over the next half hour or so. For information on responsible gambling, check out dunluie.net. Now, to give us Phil's feelers and end his calls for this weekend, we're joined by Phil Egan and end a call. Gentlemen, good afternoon to you.
Yeah, you're happy with that, aren't you?
Ah, yeah.
How long did it take you to come up with that one?
34 seconds.
I mean, my one's fairly easy because we've been discussing variations of how you can use my name, but I like Phil's feelers.
Yeah,
it rolls off.
I mean, there's a few different ways you can interpret it, but we'll stick to the football.
We're a family show at 12 o'clock on a Friday, Phil Egan. We're going to look forward, first of all, to the big game of the weekend. It is the top of the table clash, Phil, at Anfield. It's going to be live on News Talk if you want to check it out, and Off the Ball for commentary this weekend. And Nathan Murphy's going to be joined by former Republic of Ireland defender Stephen Kelly for this one. It's live at 4:30 on Off the Ball. And really and truly, Liverpool have put themselves into a great position going into this first big clash between the teams, even though last weekend things looked shaky enough for them at Villa Park for, I suppose, about 86 minutes.
Yeah, we were in a situation thinking that Liverpool would be just 3 points ahead of City going into this game, and City would have a chance to overtake them. But Liverpool did what they have done all season, and they got a result. So it's a game that I'm looking forward to. I think, unlike, say, Liverpool, Manchester United, who have this unbelievable history behind the fixture, this is quite new. There's a rivalry there because you can tell that both sets of players, there's a dislike in there now. There's obviously respect for what each other have achieved, but I think this Sunday is going to be a really good game. I know last season it was nil all, but the quality of the game was still a lot better than what we're used to seeing week in, week out. The game at the Etihad earlier in the year in January, which is the last time Liverpool lost a league game, that was exceptional. So really looking forward to it. I think there's going to be plenty of goals in it because both teams are conceding goals at the moment.
Mm. And you support the Manchester team who play in red and play on Thursday nights. Where would your affinity be on this one between Liverpool and City if you had to pick a winner in this one?
Firstly, I'm a completely neutral journalist, Will, so my allegiances lie with nobody in this game. but I would agree with what everything Phil was saying there. The quality of the games that we've been getting between these two sides, while there haven't been that many goals, especially with the nil-nils in the last couple of years, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's been a bad game. A lot of the time when it's a nil-nil game, it means that the two best teams in the league are playing up against each other and they just can't break each other down. It has been attacking. Both sides have gone for the games. So I'd expect a game similar enough this year around, first game of the season. This time last year when they met, they were level on points. A little bit different this time. But I don't think City will be feeling any pressure because of that, because of the lead that Liverpool had at Christmas time last year. And Man City were able to pull that back as well as the season progresses. So I don't think that'll be playing on their minds at all, regardless of how many times people say that, you know, is Pep's comments during the week because he's feeling the pressure. I think Pep is just playing a little bit of mind games, as both these managers do.
Were Pep's comments not particular when it came to Sadio Mane, to try and put it in the officials' minds tomorrow when they're, or on Sunday I should say, when Mane potentially gets tackled, and maybe if he does tumble over, you're just putting that little seed of doubt about whether he's taken enough contact to go down?
Yeah, he could be doing that, but also in the social media age, a lot of the time comments can be taken out of context a little bit, and I do feel that Pep has, his comments have been taken a little bit out of context. Like he also said that this Liverpool side, the reason they win is because they've got a great bunch of individuals and they've got great character, and that they are showing signs of a great team that are able to come back from these kind of, you know, win dirty, if you know what I mean.
They all sound like positive words to me.
Yes, and a lot of that, like 90% of his sentence or 90% of that comment was positive towards that, and then it was that little one line that people picked up on that people are now jumping on, saying Pep's feeling the pressure or he's playing mind games, whereas I think he showed a little bit of honesty, and he doesn't usually do that because he's a bit robotic sometimes.
Pep Guardiola obviously has a few defensive issues, Phil, particularly down in the centre of his defence.
Yeah.
We all had a bit of fun seeing Kyle Walker in goal for a little bit during the week as well. But
saved more shots than the other lads.
Which is amazing. He faced, I think, what, one shot he had to save compared to the year or two. But, you know, given how there's goalkeeper injury, there's injuries to their centre of their defence as well, this is not ideal going to Anfield where you don't have your, say, first choice back five here.
Yeah, obviously Laporte is their best defender. Not only is he good in the air, and you know certainly they need him from set pieces, but his distribution is excellent as well. Not too convinced about Ederson being ruled out of this game or being an injury doubt.
We had this with David De Gea before the Liverpool United
pretty
game.
Pretty sure
as well.
When the teams are named on Sunday at about, say, 20 past half three, that Ederson's going to be in there. If he wasn't, then that would be a massive blow for City, because Bravo was the reason Ederson was bought, because Bravo was so bad from his debut at Old Trafford. He got dropped for Willy Caballero by the end of that season, and Ederson's come in and has been sensational for City, just so calm with the ball at his feet, starts attacks, and also doesn't make too many mistakes. I know he made one last week against Southampton, but he's usually quite reliable. Then you look at the central defence. If Otamendi's playing Liverpool, the front three will be licking their lips at the thoughts of Otamendi with the ball at his feet or running at him, especially if he has the ball at his feet. We've seen it with Liverpool before. That's the trigger to press him. Let Ederson, or if it's Bravo, play the ball out as soon as Otamendi gets it. Just bring him into the space where you force an error from him, and then you can pounce on it. The problem with City's back four is usually when it's tested, they're left open. So they're kind of, they're there for the taking. And what was interesting last season was Walker and Mendy were the fullbacks, and they didn't bomb forward as they usually do. So Guardiola, I think, will have something up his sleeve. He tends to, when they go to Anfield one season, that the 4-3, he left, I think, wasn't it, he left Sterling on, no, it was the Champions League game, he left Sterling on the bench. And he just has, there's, Jurgen Klopp has had the better of Guardiola on a few occasions. Not many managers can say that. So Guardiola seems to think that he has to try something different to try and stop that.
It does make for a very interesting tactical battle as well, Andy, when you consider that, you know, City would be happy enough to maybe take possession, soak up some of the pressure in Anfield, particularly early in the game. Well, Liverpool are all about transitioning, they're all about pressing. And ultimately, that should lead to, I think, a pretty exciting game.
Well, that's the one thing that Liverpool always have done, especially in the game, in the big games and against Man City, is that they press extra hard against these teams. And it's, if Ederson is out injured, I think that plays into Liverpool's hands a little bit, because he's a bit of a comfort blanket, whereby if the defenders do get pushed right back to their own corner flag, they can give it back to Ederson and he's calm enough to take the ball and play it over the top. Whereas Bravo, while he does have good distribution, he doesn't have the 60-yard bombing pass that Ederson has in his locker. So
perhaps crucially, Claudio Bravo is not playing regularly at the moment either, particularly with that City defence.
Yeah, so
two Premier League games in 2 years.
Yeah.
Really, Ederson is going to be a key factor, whether he's fit or not, how Liverpool and Man City play. I think we can expect Kevin De Bruyne to drop a little deeper in this game and try play balls over the top. It's a pity that Leroy Sané is still out injured, because he would have been absolutely perfect for City in this kind of game, whereby when Liverpool are playing this high line that they've been playing all year, that's probably going to be the opportunity for Man City. I think we can expect a quicker, faster pace from Man City than the usual tippy-tappy football that they'd like to play. I think they're going to be doing the transitioning game like Liverpool have played, counter-attacking football, and try to catch that Liverpool high line out early on with longer balls rather than, you know, trying to drag Liverpool out of position. Liverpool will already be out of position if they're playing that high line.
City obviously have a lot of attacking options, Phil, and no doubt they want Raheem Sterling to have a big game against his former club, but how do you reckon they're going to line out in an attacking sense? Because whatever about defensive issues, they've got a million options up front there.
Yeah, Sterling obviously is the form player, but has never had a good game at Anfield. I mentioned that he was left on the bench for one game, but he just hasn't done it when he goes to Anfield. The crowd obviously getting his back from his Liverpool playing days, and you know they weren't happy when he left, and this will be the game where they really need him, because the high line Liverpool played, if you think back to, I know it was only the Community Shield, it was the curtain raiser for the season, and it was the game where Sané got injured, but before he got injured, he was having a field day against Trent Alexander-Arnold. So that's where Sterling comes in. Bernardo Silva is going to play. He might play more central, though, because we don't know if David Silva is going to be fit enough. Then, you know, Mahrez has had moments this season, but not enough. Like, you see, the way he played for Leicester, he got more time on the ball, whereas Pep Guardiola wants quicker, more incisive passing. But, you know, Mahrez obviously played during the week. He's still a quality player.
I think to end his point as well, in terms of not having Leroy Sané at this stage of the season for Man City, if City were going to Anfield typically, I think they would have probably played Sané on the left and Sterling on the right with the intention of trying to occupy Trent Alexander-Arnold and also Robertson on the other
exactly.
side as well.
And I don't think Mahrez suits the kind of game plan you need to beat Liverpool. He's the type of player that likes to take touches on the ball and cut in. If he cuts in against Liverpool, he's going to be cutting into a combination of Henderson, Fabinho and or Van Dijk. So he's not going to get the opportunity to do what he likes to do. So I can't see Mahrez starting, especially since he started during the week. So well, he could go for an option of putting Bernardo Silva a little bit higher up on the left-hand side and put Sterling on the right. But it's not something he's done regularly, so it's hard to know where he's going to go with the front three.
The Gundogan selection a few seasons ago was to try and give them a bit of defensive stability. I think he's going to try something different because he'll want to stop Alexander-Arnold and Robertson. And in terms of Klopp selection, there's only really two places up for grabs. Who partners Van Dijk? I think he's going to go at Lovren. Gomez just hasn't really looked too assured since he came back into the team. And
does the prospect of Lovren not send off an alarm in every Liverpool supporter's head?
Yeah, but you know, he played against Leicester. He did okay. You know, he's I know he's not the flavour of the month, but he was decent enough in that Leicester game. And as I said, Gomez just looks a little bit short on confidence at the moment. I'm sure he'll get it back. And then you're looking at I think he'll go Fabinho, obviously, will play. And then you'd imagine Jordan Henderson. And then it's another. Oxlade-Chamberlain definitely was probably one of the only players against Genk that put his hand up for selection.
He's been impressive off the bench over the last few weeks as well. Some great goals.
We know he can score great goals. We know he can score great goals against Man City. He scored two big ones before, both at Anfield. And I wonder, will that be in Klopp's mind when he's selecting his team? And then Salah obviously started, the other two lads had a rest. I just think the way it's set up, Liverpool have to play it as they would any other game. Don't treat it as let's not lose this game. I kind of felt they approached that game in January.
Old Trafford a little bit as well?
Yeah, well, I just think Liverpool Old Trafford is just a write-off. Right. I just think it's one of those just weird things. I know I said it in the build-up a few weeks ago where I thought United were capable of winning and people laughed because United were in such bad form. But getting back to the Liverpool City game, the crowd are going to be so up for this. You know, they're going to be lining the streets beforehand. They want to create that atmosphere. They smell blood here. Liverpool smell blood. This is a chance to go 9 points clear. And I just think it would be foolish if Liverpool kind of sat in and said, let's see what City do. Liverpool need to play the game on their terms and then they have a chance to open up a 9-point lead. I'm not saying it means the league is over, but it just also lays down a marker to City that, you know, we pushed you till the end last season. We mean even more business this season.
I know
season.
You're three fixtures behind with only 12 played. And in terms of that Liverpool midfield selection, could Klopp unleash the Ox then?
I've been really impressed with Ox since he came back. The only thing I would question is whether he is match fit. We've seen that from the last couple of games, but whether he's match fit to play the high-intensity press that Liverpool are going to want to play for as long as they're going to need to do it against Man City. It's one thing doing it against Genk. It's another thing doing it against the league champions. You're going to have to chase ball, be willing to make those runs off the ball, keep pressing them up. I think Oxlade is a great player, but I would just question whether he's up to that fitness, and I can't see Klopp taking the risk in that. He's a good option off the bench as well. We know he can grab a goal. So I would imagine he's going to go with it. In these bigger fixtures, Klopp has sometimes gone with Milner as a safety blanket for just that experience. He did last year. Whether he's going to go with that there again this year, I don't know. Keita is also a great option to have. He's been brilliant since he started coming back into the team. So the midfield is somewhere that Liverpool do have options in, but it's just the type of game plan they want to go for, whether they're going to be conservative like Phil is saying, or whether they're actually going to go out and bring the game to Man City. If they're going to go out and bring it, you start the Ox. If they're going to be a little bit more conservative, go with Milner.
Before I get your predictions, a lot of the odds, understandably, for this weekend in terms of our specials are based around this game at Anfield. And Paddy Power is the home of the Money Back Special. And they're offering Money Back as a free bet on all markets if Man City beat Liverpool. That is a maximum free bet of €10 per day. Terms and conditions apply on that one as well. And in terms of some of the special bets, Enda, Mane, after all the talk this week, to win a penalty 12-1.
Always has the potential. Otamendi starting, bit rash. Mane gets in behind. If VAR is in operation, who knows? It's hard to know what a penalty is these days.
Mm. Well, Mane is going to dribble the ball into congested areas.
Yeah, Fernandinho as well, is he's also somebody that can give away penalties because he just doesn't look comfortable playing as a centre-half. He suits against lower league teams where he's used as a possession-based centre-half, but running at him, he's used to breaking up play. He's used to putting in challenges. That's his instinct. So if someone runs at him, he's still going to have that instinct to throw in a challenge. And if he mistimes it, could give away a penalty. But I think both teams are going to score in this game. Liverpool are just winning games 2-1, it seems, regularly now. So it wouldn't surprise me if that's the case, that they grind out another 2-1.
Well, Andy, we're going to find out if they can score in Klopp time again, like they did last weekend, where Mane got the winner. And if Liverpool were to score after 89:59 on the clock, so if they score past the 90th minute, that's coming in at 7-1 as a special bet for this weekend.
Yeah, again, we spoke about Liverpool and the different brands of football they've been playing this year, and they have learned how to play dirty and win dirty. So it's always a sign, it's a cliche, but it always is true that a sign of champions is teams who never refuse to just take the draw. They keep going, keep pressing teams. And you know what? People can say whether it was a penalty for Mane or not last week. That's up to their own decision or their opinion. But he has to get in that area in the first place. And that was in, what, 93rd minute?
Yep.
So they're still pressing Aston Villa to the stage where Mane is in the box with a shooting opportunity in the 93rd minute. So there's always a chance that you're going to score late. And we saw late drama in the last game or two games ago between these sides when Pep Guardiola was off celebrating and then he dropped to his knees because VAR ruled it out. So I'm hoping for a little bit more of that.
Well, VAR goal line technology has been important in these games between the sides, as no Liverpool fan would have to remember it, reminded of from last season. But Man City fell to receive a penalty with thanks to VAR 7-1.
They got one there last season. I remember Jesus fouled by Van Dijk and Mahrez. I think they're still looking for that penalty. He hit it that high over the bar. But yeah, they don't concede that many penalties, Liverpool. So I'm not sure about that one. As I said, I just hope we get a really good game that isn't the talk after the game, that the best team wins and it's nice and open. An early goal would actually really set us off on the right path, I think.
And I'm a big fan of VAR, but last week we saw what happened with the Liverpool one particularly, where two lines are drawn and you can barely even see if the shoulder is over the line. I can understand why some people get a bit annoyed with the technology when you see decisions like Martin Atkinson made last week.
I'm just fed up with it. They need to redraw the rules or redraw what VAR is used for, because it's not being used correctly. In that sense, he is offside, but I mean, his armpit's offside. I think for offsides, you're going to have to change it so that it's your feet. If your feet are offside, that's offside. If a tiny bit of your finger's offside, that's not offside. You need to have a little bit of leeway for common sense in this. I actually originally thought that, you know, it's going to be black and white for offsides. It just hasn't been the case. It's been a bit of a mess, and especially for fouls or penalties that are left up to the referee has the final say. He can overrule the VAR, but they just haven't been doing that yet.
Yeah, but especially when they just leave decisions now and go back four or five phases before it happened. Like, it seems crazy that something that happened in the opposite corner is seen as a direct effect on something that happens 35 seconds later.
And you just need to, I think the referees need to start looking at the TV on the touchline, because it's not going over to do that does not take any longer than what it's currently taking to make decisions. It's taken away from the atmosphere and it's ruining the entertainment value of the game. And while it is making the game a fairer game, it's making majority correct decisions. It's still taking away from the entertainment value. And the Premier League, they care about money. They care about revenue. And soon enough, if it keeps continuing to ruin the atmosphere for fans, it's going to continue to frustrate them and that's going to impact on them.
OK, let's get predictions then for the big game of the weekend. Phil, how do you see it going? I know you already expect goals in this.
Yeah, I said 2-1, but I think maybe 3-1 Liverpool.
OK. Ender?
I'm going to go with a 2-2 draw.
Oof.
Sitting right on the fence.
I think Liverpool will probably take a draw at this stage and just keep that 6-point lead at the top. Going to our second live game of the weekend then on Off the Ball, it's Manchester United against Brighton and Hove Albion. It's going to be Rob Daly and Brian Kerr with the commentary at 2 o'clock, I should say, on News Talk this coming Sunday. Manchester United, Phil, their kind of mini renaissance came to an end, 4 or 5 decent results, and then they just didn't perform against Bournemouth last week.
Yeah, like they had chances, you know, Greenwood hit the post and this is what we talked about last week, where they're going to go on little runs where they get 2 or 3 wins and you think, but they're going to have setbacks. And this is just something that's going to happen. They're still inconsistent and teams don't fear playing Manchester United. So there is going to be certain games where you think that they should win, but they don't win. And that's just the nature of where they are at the moment. And look, I think the encouraging thing is you'd imagine it can't get any worse. So they should be able to climb their way up the table. I think at this stage, unless they do some brilliant business in January, top four already looks like it might be too far off for them.
And Solskjaer has heavily indicated he's not going to spend in January. Well, could be a double bluff.
It's hard. Like, it's hard to get. You don't always get good players. Now, there is exceptions. Liverpool signed Luis Suarez in January. And you know, there's exceptions there, but also as well you're depending on United to get their business done quickly, and that's just something that hasn't happened with Ed Woodward there, so you wouldn't hold out for too much there. So you know, the interesting thing going into this game is Brighton have never won at Old Trafford, but Brighton are ahead of United in the league, and that's a worry if you're a United supporter. But this game you'd expect them to win. It'd be interesting to see how Graham Potter approaches it, because, you know, we've heard that he wants to play more expansive, and he's certainly not as defensive as Chris Hughton. And even when they go ahead in games, he doesn't just sit on it. He wants to go and get that second goal. But listen to Solskjaer talking about the way United played against Partizan. He basically said, these games are great because we'd loads of space. So if you're Graham Potter and you hear that, you're thinking maybe like you take the space away from United and frustrate them.
Well, then again, they're Brighton obviously on a really good run at the moment. They've looked really bright in the last few weeks. In many ways, maybe the international break and this trip to Old Trafford's coming at the wrong time when they're on such a good run. But how do you expect them to approach? Because as Phil said, maybe they might just change ever so slightly and try and make things a bit more difficult tomorrow.
I don't think they will, though, just based on the performances against the other big sides in this season. They have tried to play the ball around all the time, opening up gaps, exploiting gaps in the opposition rather than the opposition not exploiting gaps in them. So they're playing a real forward, expansive style of football. Against United, I think United will be a little bit tired because I think that plays into the fact that they're being really inconsistent as well, is that these players are playing, they don't have the squad to rotate like other teams do, so they're playing, every single one of these players are playing 3 games a week or 2 games a week, depending on who you're talking, like Anthony Martial, Rashford, McTominay, Fred, Wan-Bissaka. All these players are playing the full 90 minutes of every single game now, so they're getting tired. And you can probably expect a little bit of legs from United this week, and that'll play right into Brighton's hands because they have a lot of pace in that team. Aaron Connolly's been really coming into his own form, showing what he can do at this level. Alzate out in the left wing, he's 21 as well. Mopé is really good as well. They've got some absolutely quality players that can damage United if United defend like they did against Bournemouth last week, for example.
From a greedy Irish perspective, we're hoping Aaron Connolly plays at Old Trafford and has a good game ahead of the international matches.
Well, if he gets as much space as the Bournemouth strikers did last week, then he could have a lot of fun next week. or this weekend even.
OK, we'll look, Phil, at the other game on Sunday before we go back to Saturday. Wolves and Aston Villa, they met in the Carabao Cup. I would imagine with very different 11s the week before last. We'd imagine that Wolves back more towards their first choice team. They're kind of a mix and match side last night in the Europa as well.
Yeah, they're strange in the sense that, going back to what Enda said about United and the European hangover as such, it seems to be more of an issue. Maybe, I don't know the stats on it, but just some games get moved to a Sunday that they're not on TV. You don't get to see them. I know this one will be on TV, the Wolves and Villa game. But Wolves were coming off a European game going to the Etihad, and I thought, yeah, they're going to be leggy, and then they win 2-0. So I think, you know, the European thing can be used when it suits. But you know what, Wolves, team pretty much picks itself. I think Bali is a big loss for them. But it's Adama Traore going up against a club that he would have played for a season when he was on loan. And, you know, Wolves are, you know what you're going to get from them, that they're going to be the shape, they're compact, love to counter-attack, and, you know, they've got dangers up front. So I think Villa will take encouragement for the way they played against Liverpool last week without their best player. Like, Jack Grealish wasn't playing, and you kind of wonder, would they have seen the job out if he was playing? But I was impressed with Villa. You know, they were a couple of minutes away from becoming the first team to beat Liverpool this season. So I never really had any concerns for Villa in terms of relegation. Like, I'm not saying they're going to finish mid-table or anything, but
they look solid, though.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And moving on to Saturday's games, I think the one on Saturday night is a particularly interesting one. Leicester, who have been in really, really good form, obviously sitting pretty up around the top four at the moment, up against an Arsenal side who just cannot seem to close a game out. Again, during the Europa League this week, on the unusual kickoff time on Wednesday in Portugal, they concede late against Vitória and they end up drawing one apiece. They've thrown away leads in the Premier League in their last three games as well. For some reason, they just can't get the job done at the moment.
Yeah, Emery did say he would get Arsenal back playing on Wednesday afternoons, and you know what? He did. Just not in the right competition. But I think in this game, Leicester are going to dominate Arsenal for a good chunk of the game, especially in the second half, because we've seen with Leicester this year, once they sniff blood, they keep going and keep going and do not let off the opposition. And if Arsenal go ahead and let Leicester back into this game, I think Leicester will have too much for them going forward. Again, midfield's going to be a key battle in this. If you look at the midfield that Emery played during the week, he played Torreira, Guendouzi and Ceballos as a sort of three, with Ozil playing as a false nine. If they go for that again, Leicester play five in midfield with four of them being attacking players, so they're going to completely overrun them in that position. So it just depends whether Emery takes a little bit more of a conservative approach and pulls Ozil back in and has three in the front three and has Ozil in the midfield as well. As
will Ozil play?
No,
Phil?
Ceballos won't play either. Ceballos is injured. Obviously, Jack is out. So you have Torreira, Guendouzi. You said, like, why can't, like, they can't hold on to a lead because they don't have a good enough defence. And this was always going to be the problem. This is why, at the start of the season, my feeling from Arsenal's point of view was, they're going to be so entertaining because even if they're ahead in games, they're going to be vulnerable. And that's the way it's working out. But Jamie Vardy is obviously the key component in the Leicester attack. He's just been in brilliant form since Brendan Rodgers came in. And Rodgers has just tweaked things a little bit with Vardy. Like, Vardy, obviously, high energy, but Rodgers has said to him, that's grand, but, you know, maybe hold on to some of that energy for when you need it.
And I also think under Rodgers as well, it's less about Jamie Vardy being the singular threat in their forward line. He's now willing to make runs to make space for others, while even in the title-winning season, Leicester's tactic was largely around stretch a defence and get Vardy in behind.
Yeah, get the ball to Mahrez, he'll pick out Vardy. And that, I obviously, Perez is starting to work his way into the team. Harvey Barnes obviously came back at the start of the year. He came back after a loan spell at West Brom. Leicester, as impressive as they've been, my only concern for them would be injuries. That if something was to happen to Vardy or one of the centre halves.
Madison as well, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Well, Madison, I think they can cope without. But if, because, you know, they still have Tielemans, so they have that creative spark in there.
Well, but for example, if Ndidi got injured, that's a major loss for them, because that's the
protection they have.
So that they can play that four in midfield. If he goes, it's a question of who do you drop back or who do you drop out of the team to fill his boots.
Like, I'd say if Unai Emery, just before he goes to sleep tonight, and when he closes his eyes, he'll probably just see Jamie Vardy in his sleep, because he scored 8 goals in his last 8 starts. And this fixture last season, it was in April, Leicester won a 3-0, and dare I say it, if Leicester were to win 3-0 tomorrow, I'm not sure if they will, but if they were to win 3-0,
thanks for the Emerys.
Emery is under pressure. And if they suffer a heavy defeat in the next few weeks,
We've seen before as well, we'll talk about Everton and Marco Silva in a moment, that like if you're going to sack a manager, this November international window is one where teams often jettison, because
you've
got 2 weeks in order to get a manager in. Stoke were greedy maybe and got Michael O'Neill a few days before the international break even happened, but it probably is a good time to make a change.
It probably is, and I suppose one way you could look at it is if you look at the Bayern Munich job, for example, it has a lot of comparisons with Emery at the minute. Although Bayern Munich have been successful in the last couple of years in the league, obviously. But Kovac was a person who was brought in. They didn't know whether he was going to be successful or not. A lot of people questioned whether he had the tactical nous to take over a club as big as Bayern Munich. And it's kind of the same as what Emery is at the minute. And all it took was a big defeat to against Frankfurt, Eintracht Frankfurt, and that was him gone. So again, Leicester, who are competing for top four this year, if they come out with a big result, then Emery, it could be the end of Emery, never mind just putting him under even more pressure.
How do you see it going, Andy? Because obviously, you know, Leicester, this is a big game for them if they are going to push for top four.
Well, they've been very good at home, and I expect them probably to win this game. It might not be an easy win for them, but I just, the way that they've been playing, they've been getting stronger as the game goes on. And Arsenal obviously get weaker as the game goes on. So I would expect Leicester to win this at 2-1, maybe 3-1.
Yeah, I could see Arsenal scoring, definitely. And it's hard to put a case forward for Arsenal, given how bad their away form is. And even if they go ahead, what's frustrating from an Arsenal point of view is he just seems to not put the handbrake on, but he definitely errs on the side of caution, where you have to play to your strengths. And Arsenal have so much attacking talent, you have to just keep the foot down and keep going. And sure, you might concede a goal, but there's a very good chance with all that attacking talent you'll outscore teams. And I include Leicester in that. I said Leicester are going along nicely, but things are going very well. You know, they've 2 big wins against 10 men. So the message there for Arsenal is definitely don't get a player sent off. But if it's put up to Leicester, I'd like to see what they're made of.
Be interesting game. That one's at 5:30 tomorrow evening. Want to wet the lips a little bit tomorrow, Phil, as well. Chelsea, Crystal Palace, this London derby that kicks the weekend off, really, at 12:30.
Yeah, 5 wins in a row in the league for Chelsea. The only problem for them tomorrow, no Jorginho. He's suspended. Looks like Mason Mount is out injured as well. So Jorginho and Mateo Kovacic, 2 players that, you know, weren't
fancy
them either. No, well, last season Jorginho was almost seen as Sarri's pet. He brought him from Napoli, and you know, he obviously was starting in a position where
every argument we had was that he was standing in Kante's position.
Yeah, but he saw his ball for the Tammy Abraham goal last week. It was sensational. So he's going to be a loss. Obviously, Mount has been brilliant since he's come in. It's a tricky one, that Palace are not scoring many goals. But if they're going to do damage, it's always away from home. That's where you fancy them. And
only 2 teams won more away games in the Premier League in 2019 than Crystal Palace.
Yeah, that's still haven't lost away from home this year as well. Yeah. So it's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah,
Roy Hodgson's going to set up, I think, to try and frustrate Chelsea in this one. And we saw, like at the Etihad last season, if Palace get chances on the break in a big game like this, they can score.
Yeah, and I think back to how Newcastle did against Chelsea. Chelsea left it till the last 15 minutes before Marcus Alonso got the goal. So that was the blueprint maybe that Roy Hodgson is looking at. Defend deep, and you've got players like Zaha who will cause havoc on the break.
You'd hope for Chelsea's, from a Chelsea point of view, they're not going to start Marcus Alonso at left back against Wilfred Zaha, who's been playing wide on the right. If they are, he's going to do some serious damage to
Okay, we'll get the hot takes symbol at the ready in terms of the video team, because these are our hot takes on the rest of the games this weekend. And I'll give you the shout on Burnley against West Ham. West Ham's form is stone cold at the moment.
It is, and I went over to see them against Sheffield United a few weeks ago. They're very frustrating to watch. They do a lot of the good stuff, get into the box, but then once they get into the box, they don't know what to do. Burnley completely dominated away from home against Sheffield United as well. So Burnley at home are a different animal. West Ham, very, very sketchy. So I would actually go with probably an easy enough win for Burnley.
Yeah, I fear for West Ham because of their goalkeeper. Roberto is an absolute disaster. He's an accident waiting to happen. Fabianski's a big loss for them. And the only option they have is David Martin, who's the Alvin Martin's son, who they signed from Millwall in the summer. So do you put him in? Because Roberto was awful last week against Newcastle, especially for the Fernandes goal. I don't know where he was. I don't know what he was doing.
It's like with players like Chris Wood and Ashley Barnes up front.
Just aerial bombardment.
Just stick them in.
Phil, Bournemouth scored at last weekend and got the win against Manchester United. Okay. So at least their October is put behind them. They go away from home to Newcastle with that great win at the London Stadium last weekend. How do you see it going?
I wonder, is this the weekend Miguel Almiron will actually score a goal for Newcastle? Probably not, but this is going to be a tight one. This game, although Bournemouth you kind of associate with high scoring games, this is a fixture that is rarely high scoring. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's a one-all draw in that one.
And?
Yeah, I would go with something similar than that. Newcastle were actually quite good against West Ham last week, so it just depends whether they can tighten up that defence when they are going out in attack and don't concede easy goals like they did against West Ham, put themselves under pressure.
Okay, Southampton end of last weekend, I guess, stopped the rot a little bit in terms of how they played. Very credible performance on the back of a couple of heavy beatings. They take on Everton, who rescued it a little bit against Spurs last week, but still, you know, under pressure in terms of how they performed.
Yeah, it's probably a good time for Southampton to get Everton in a bad way, because you don't know how these Everton players are going to react to the events of last week. So Everton were actually quite good against Tottenham and did well to come back into the game, albeit Tottenham did have a man sent off and Everton had about five or six scoring chances after that. So it just depends what Everton turn up. Same with Southampton. Unlucky to get Man City last week after the 9-0 defeat against Leicester. So I would say we're probably looking for a draw. St Mary's is just the worst ground to, like, Southampton. It's no advantage to Southampton playing St Mary's. It's no atmosphere and nobody fears them there. So I would go with probably a 1-1 draw or a 2-1 Everton.
If that's their first game back as well since the 9-0, it's not going to be a nice experience for them. But if they were to win, surely that's the end of Marco Silva.
Yeah.
Because I don't know where they're going or what they're trying to do. And if they lose to Southampton, you know, they're just sliding down the table. International break. I just think for the squad that Everton have, they should be doing so much better.
Yeah, I think Marcus Silva probably would have been gone by now, but for the fact they spent so long trying to get him, it's almost a case of, well, we have to give him time. Spurs against Sheffield United, Phil. Spurs maybe will hope that it's Red Star Belgrade they're playing here as opposed to Sheffield United. The chance during the week was, can we play you every week?
Yeah, but just pretend that the red and white stripes, they won't be wearing them against Spurs. But yeah, we've seen glimpses of this. It was interesting, the team selection. Lo Celso obviously started, he scored. Son got a couple of goals, which, you know, ended a difficult week for him. But what is he going to do? Eriksen scored as well, but at times just doesn't look like he's interested. Sheffield United are undefeated in the league away from home this season. They're frustrating. I know they're doing well at the moment. They would have been one of my three picks to get relegated. I haven't changed that because I just wonder, are they going to, the lack of goals, I know they were among the goals last week, but is that going to come back? And yeah, I think if Spurs get a goal in the first 20 minutes, I think this is a game that they should be able to see out comfortably by a couple of goals.
What's the agenda? Finally, Spurs able to maybe replicate their Champions League form back in the league?
I don't think it's going to be as easy as they had it during the week, because Sheffield United are very good defensively, very structured. But they don't score that much. So Tottenham will be able to go out at attack without fearing of being caught in the break. too often. So I would say Tottenham might just have enough going forward to break them down eventually. It's not going to be a high-scoring game, though.
Just before I give you the last what odds, Paddy, and I'll give you a first shout. Tonight, a meeting at the bottom two. Watford, who continue to wait for that first win of the season,
going
into game number 12. Is tonight the night, Andy? They play Norwich away.
In short, no. I'm going to go with a 0-0 draw in this.
All right, Phil, we shouldn't be watching. We should watch the United Champions Cup as opposed to that.
No, I think that there'll be goals in this game, and I think this could be the night for Watford.
All right.
Remember the last time there was a Friday night game? I got that one pretty comprehensively wrong.
That was the 9-0?
Yeah. So, yeah.
There you go, everyone. Bet on the Norwich home win then after Phil's moment of sagism there. What odds, Paddy? The final one is basically the overachievers so far, effectively. Sheffield United, Brighton and Bournemouth all to start the weekend in the top half of the table, but to end it in the bottom half on Sunday evening. Odds of 25-1 if you want to back against those three teams losing this weekend, effectively. Okay, that's our Paddy Power half hour. It's the last weekend of the Premier League before the international break. We'll be back across Off the Ball social channels and on the Go Loud app as well at 12 next Friday to take a look at the international break. Have a good one.
The Paddy Power half hour on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.